Jim, Bob Knight is here. Bob, how were you able to defeat Temple?
We scored more points than they did. That's something that you may have missed in the news media, that the team, when the buzzer blows...
Yeah. How'd you get around the matchup zone? What did you tell your kids?
Well, we played...
Hello, everybody. I'm your host, Chris Gasper, and welcome to the Season Ticket Podcast for Wednesday, January 10th. We have a great guest for you today. She's a pioneer, a trailblazer, and a talented storyteller. In 2009, she was voted the number one female sportscaster of all time. And in 2015, she was enshrined in the National Sportscasters and Sports Writers Association Hall of Fame. She's the one and only Leslie Visser. Leslie, thanks for joining us here on Season Ticket.
Oh, Chris, could you say it again?
Not as eloquently as you could. That's not quite up to your standards. But we're really happy to have you on the podcast today. And everybody knows you from your great work, obviously, for CBS Sports and ABC Sports. But I think for the younger audience listening to this, they don't know that you started out right here at the Boston Globe.
Yeah, it's still my most proud. I'm really still a writer at heart. And I can remember, so when I started there, of course, I was the only woman. And it was pretty much a lot of the same people. You know, it was Peter Gammons on baseball, Bob Ryan on basketball, Bud Collins on tennis, Will McDonough on football, and Lee Monfil and Ray were the columnists. And I can remember when CBS first came up to the Globe to offer me a job, I was like, why would I leave the Globe? It was so perfect.
Well, it's great to have you on, and you mentioned that you were the only woman on that tremendous staff, the murderer's row, really, of sports writing at the time, and you have a memoir about this. It's a new book that Leslie has written. It's Sometimes You Have to Cross, when it says, Don't Walk, a memoir of breaking barriers. And what I think is really cool about this, Leslie, is the title of the book is very personal to you.
Oh, yeah. Thanks for asking. My family moved a lot when I was a kid, which was great for sports. You know, it wasn't good for a marriage, but it was great for sports. And we were living in Cincinnati, and I was about, I guess, 9 or 10. And I said to my mother, you know what? When I grow up, I want to be a sports writer. This was in the 60s. And, I mean, that was like saying I want to go to the moon, because at that time, women really were, they were homemakers or teachers or nurses. And I said, I want to be a sports writer. And she said, that's great. Sometimes you have to cross when it says don't walk.
In reading the book, Leslie, what struck me is it's amazing what you had to deal with when you first started out. When you first started covering the Patriots for the Globe in the 70s, there was actually something on the credential that you got that said no women or children in the press box, and you were not allowed in the locker room and still had to cover the team. How did you do that?
There were so many obstacles, but yes, that's true. Right on the credential that I wore, it said no women or children in the press box, which was pretty diminishing. And they had no ladies' rooms. Did you see the movie Hidden Figures?
I have. Great film.
Okay, you know that scene where Kevin Costner says to her, "Where do you go every day?" And she says,
yes.
"I go to the bathroom." And he says, "For 40 minutes." Well, that was kind of my life, because there were no bathroom. There were no ladies' rooms because there were no other ladies. So I used to sit in the press box. Patriots would have the ball, first and 10 on their own 20. And I would think, gosh, can I get down the elevator, across the field, and back up before they punted? Yeah, that was tough. And then the locker rooms weren't, they had no provisions for equal access for another 7 years, I think. So yeah, I was out in all those parking lots. The one good thing was that it made you do all the work yourself. You know how so many times you go in a locker room now and someone just sticks a mic in?
Oh, yeah, there's so many of us. It's so hard to get a one-on-one. But, yeah, you're absolutely right. It's a pack mentality.
And they don't even make eye contact with the guy. So in that way, it was really good for me, because I had to think of every question. I had to find that where I would get in trouble is if two of the players I needed came out at once. You know, I kind of got stuck. I would sort of have to ask one, could you just wait 2 minutes? And it was a real juggling act.
Were there ever times when you thought about this and said, you know what, they don't really want me here. They're making my job much more difficult than my male counterparts. I don't need this. I'm a smart woman. I can do something else and make a lot more money.
No, I had a passion for sports. The way some kids want to you know, they want music or poetry or ballet or art. I just loved sports. So, no, I looked at it as, are you kidding me? I'm going to Three Rivers to cover the Steelers. I'm probably half the listeners don't know it was Three Rivers. But, gosh, how lucky am I? And I had two thoughts. One, that I would use humor. And, you know, because you're born in Boston, humor is what we, that's our default mechanism, and that was mine. I never sued anybody. I never complained. You know, like if a player were too aggressive or something with me, I would just say, oh, come on, your mother didn't teach you to talk like that. So that was actually great. That worked out great. And then I also had the thought that I didn't want to complain to anyone because I didn't want anyone to say, see, a woman can't do this.
Yeah, that's interesting because that's a lot of pressure. Were you aware of that at the time, that if I don't succeed in this, some of the women who are my contemporaries who are getting opportunities and women in the future won't get these opportunities if I don't do a good job, if I don't succeed?
Yeah, I felt like I was representing the globe. I was representing women. And it wasn't until about maybe 6 or 7 years later that that great bubble of women came along that were, of course, Jackie McMullen and Sally Jenkins and Chris Brennan. They sort of all came along in a little class, you know, and they were all great. So I did feel that, yeah, I mean, we used to laugh, you know, when are there going to be enough women that we're not on each other's Christmas cards?
Two of my favorite stories I'd like you to be able to tell that were in the book. One involves Terry Bradshaw and you trying to get an interview with him. And another one involves Jim McMahon of the Chicago Bears when you could be in the locker room and him saying that he had a present for you.
Oh, yeah. And I thought, thank you for asking about those. I was on some other show recently and they said, oh, and Jim McMahon was so insulting to you. And I said, no, it was actually funny. It was, he said to me, this is when locker rooms were open and it was in the in December. And he said, Leslie, come on over to my locker. I have a Christmas present for you. And I don't know about you, but probably Tom Brady hasn't sent you many Christmas presents.
No, I'm still waiting on those Uggs, Leslie. Still waiting on them.
Yeah, right. Or the hat or the whatever, the cologne. But I was really kind of touched. You know, I thought, wow, a quarterback, that's really pretty nice. So I went over to his locker, and he dug around the bottom of the locker, and all the players came around, and they were kind of smirking. And he dug into the bottom of his locker and came up with this box. And I opened it up, and it was a black negligee. God, I was mortified. I mean, I'm a Jesuit from Boston College. I was mortified, but he wasn't doing it to be cruel, you know. And so I think that playful attitude is kind of what worked for me all those years covering the NFL. The Terry Bradshaw was really early on, and I was freezing outside. That was before my locker rooms are open, and I was outside all by myself. It was a game that had gone, it was, you know, late, dark, cold, freezing. And I was there with my little notepad and my pen, and finally Terry came out, and I said, I started to ask him a question, and before I could even ask him the question, he grabbed my notepad and pen, signed an autograph, and ran away. And I'm kind of yelling at him, wait, I'm a reporter. So he's since then become a very good friend of mine. And he always said that his autograph was worth more than whatever garbage I was going to put in the Globe.
That's terrible. That is so funny. It's amazing that that's something that both those incidents, you know, illustrate sort of what you had to put up with and fight through, you know, just to do your job, and you know, how times have changed because you really couldn't get away with that. And I think you handled both of those, obviously, with class. I think what McMahon did was completely inappropriate. And I think you ended up with the last laugh on him because you are in the Pro Football Hall of Fame, and Jim McMahon is not.
No, and he's got a tough go of it. I saw him at a black tie event a couple years ago, and I said to him, Jim, what is wrong with you? Of course, now we know, right? But
yeah.
I said, what is wrong with you? And he said, oh, I forgot to put in my teeth. So he paid a big price, you know, for what he did. But when you talk about how times have changed, I was thinking this. Remember the young woman who asked Cam Newton that question?
Yes, I do. Yeah, from the Charlotte Observer. Yes, and Cam
was
very condescending.
About the and I thought to myself, gosh, that really, times aren't changing fast enough for me. But that's pretty good because when I started, everyone would have sided with the quarterback. And instead, he got blasted. You know, her question was legitimate. She was legitimate. So I thought, well, that's pretty good.
Yeah, that's a good point when you mention that in terms of, you know, still definitely there's a double standard, it seems like, the way female reporters are treated versus male reporters. Let me ask you this from the television side, because so many people know you from your great work on television. As a female sports reporter, do you find that when it comes to television, that far too often female sports reporters are judged more by their physical appearance than the quality of their work? Because there's a part in this book where you talk about getting replaced on Monday Night Football by Melissa Stark and how devastating that was.
Oh, yeah, I was crushed. And, you know, it wasn't Melissa's fault, but she really did not have, I don't think, any NFL experience. And then she was gone pretty quickly, replaced by Lisa Guerrero, who I think had been an Oakland Raider cheerleader.
She was a Patriots cheerleader. She was here. She dated Hugh Millen in the dark old days of the Patriots in the early 90s.
I think there was a time there where some women didn't represent all women. And, you know, you look at the ones now on TV, and you do know that they know. You know Michelle Tafoya knows what she's doing, Susie Colbert. We have a couple of great ones, Tracy Wolfson, Ellie LaForce. So, you know, I think whatever the pendulum was, wherever it was going, I think now, at least the women I know, I really believe them, what they're saying.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there are a lot. Lisa Salters is another one who I think does
a
fantastic job. Absolutely. But that is another layer that I'm not sure that, again, a lot of, you know, male counterparts like myself would even understand or really have to deal with. So it is really interesting. And, of course, Leslie Visser, the first woman ever to report from the sidelines of an NFL game. She did that for CBS in 1984. We're going to take a brief time out here on Season Ticket. When we come back, more from Leslie Visser. And we're going to ask her to tell a Dan Shaughnessy story, because Leslie grew up with Dan here at the Boston Globe, and they're still close, and I'm sure she has some pretty good dirt on Dan. Stay tuned for that.
Hope he's not listening.
Welcome back to Season Ticket. If you like us, subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. Remember, subscribing is the best way to make sure you can get our latest episode as soon as it's available. Back now with the legendary Leslie Visser, and we're talking about her wonderful book, Sometimes You Have to Cross When It Says Don't Walk, a memoir of breaking barriers. Now, as promised, what's interesting to me, and I knew this having worked at the Globe, and Kevin Paul DuPont, who is in the Hockey Hall of Fame for his work, and Dan Shaughnessy in the Baseball Hall of Fame for his work, Leslie Visser in the Pro Football Hall of Fame for her work. You guys all came up together at the Globe covering high schools. And I want a good Dan Shaughnessy story, Leslie, like a good Dan Shaughnessy story. What was he like as a young reporter and a young man?
Oh, he was an idiot, like he is now. He was, you know, he was the same thing, blowing his cheeks out with disgust at something. And we would all meet. There was a guy, Neil Singlais, who ran the high school division. And the three of us, Kevin, Dan, and I, were called Neil's Wheels. And we would all meet before the Wharf became the Boston Harbor Hotel and everything. You could get like two margaritas for $3, you know, in some rat bar down there. So we would go down there. And I remember once Dan invited me to a wedding of one of his best friends. So I said, sure. So this wedding, I am not joking, was out. Now, we were like 20 years old, 1920. And the wedding was in Worcester. But it was in a VFW hall, and it was enclosed. So it's the middle of summer. You know how hot it gets in Boston. It's outside of Worcester. It's a million degrees, and there are no windows in this place. So everybody is just like dripping sweat like you can't believe. And, I mean, I look at Dan. Dan doesn't even want to look me in the face because this is just such a disaster. So finally, the groom, his best friend, comes over to us and says, "This wedding sucks." Very nice, Dan. Very nice.
That's so funny.
It was hysterical. It was hysterical, Dan. I don't think he looked me in the eye for like 6 months. But yeah, I'll tell you another one that he did recently. So this shows you how little distance he has come. About 4 years ago at the Super Bowl, a photographer was there. He was he's a CBS photographer, and so he was taking pictures of like Marino and me or Sims and Nance or something. And then Dan came over, and Dan puts his arm around me, and the photographer is adjusting the lighting. And Dan's like, "Hey, buddy, you think you could speed it up a little? You know, I got a lot of work to do. Could you get with it?" So I'm like elbowing Dan. The guy takes the picture. Well, this photographer is named John Philo, and he's the guy who won the Pulitzer Prize at the Kent State, you know, the woman's
yes.
iconic picture.
Yes.
So that's who Dan is saying, "Hey, buddy, could you hurry it up a little?"
Oh, that is great. Did you guys have any sense back then? I mean, you talked about how great the Globe Sports Department was, but did you have any sense at that time that you would all go on to have the success that you all have ended up having?
Well, I think most of those people, that's why they were at the Globe, because they were the best at their position. So, you know, we used to win the best sports section in the country every single year. And then SI named us that time that we were there the best of all time. So, yeah, I think you knew you were – when somebody like Will McDonough would have Pete Rozelle on one phone and Al Davis on the other, you knew that they were – pretty high and mighty there. So, but yeah, you knew, we used to laugh like when Will McDonough went home, everyone had Rolodexes then, and like Dan and Kevin and I would be diving under Will's desk, you know, to get his Rolodex.
That is great.
Oh yeah, and that was a great, great, great place to work. You know, the changes that people make, which is why I think they should have adjusted to women by now. But remember, everybody smoked. I can remember being in that press box, you know, the Patriots, and everybody in there, I wasn't a smoker myself, but everybody in there, you know, just smoked like crazy. And you don't ever see that now, I don't think.
No, absolutely not. I do want to pivot here a little bit, Leslie. Just, you are the only sportscaster in history who's worked network broadcast of the Final Four, the Super Bowl, the World Series, the NBA Finals, Triple Crown Horse Racing, the Olympics, the U.S. Open, and World Figure Skating Championship. And there's a lot of great stories, and there's a lot of remembrances of great moments in the book here. Like, you were there, you know, when Michael Jordan hit the famous shot against Georgetown in the NCAA Championship in 1982. But you've also done some stuff that's outside of sports, and I know something that was important to you was the fall of the Berlin Wall. And being able to cover that from a sports standpoint, because at that time it was West Germany and East Germany. You had the great East German figure skater, Katarina Witt. But there was a personal connection for you being there when that wall fell.
Yeah, it was. I mean, I just had a very small slice. I mean, my father is from Amsterdam. Visser is very common if you've been over there. It's a very common name. And he wasn't Jewish, but he grew up under the Nazi occupation. So for 6 years, they were starving, too. I mean, he went to Montessori school with Anne Frank. I mean, it was, you know, it's a small country, and they were one people. And for 6 years, they were all starving. So when I got to go to the fall of the Berlin Wall, it was so emotional to see the people from East Germany. They, you know, they walked for days from Potsdam and Dresden just to get through that Brandenburg Gate. And it was right as the fall was happening, so our CBS crew, we did get to go into East Germany through Checkpoint Charlie. And, you know, my dad always said, he really didn't know sports, but he said, if you're in America, you're on third base.
Something people might not know about your career is, you know, all the international sporting events that you covered and all the stuff that you did there. It wasn't just the NFL or the NCAA. Did you enjoy that stuff more or as much as covering big time American sports?
I really loved, I loved each at bat. Every at bat to me was a quality at bat. So, you know, I did the first story with Yao Ming. And, have you done interviews like this, Chris, where you have to go through an interpreter?
I've never had to do that. No.
It's brutal because it's like you ask the question, the interpreter asks, Yao Ming, and then you have no idea what Yao Ming's saying, you know, and then it comes back through the interpreter while the two government people stand there. So I spent a week in Shanghai, and he only spoke English one time. So we're sitting there, it's like the fifth time I'm interviewing him, and I say to the interpreter, will you ask or somehow say to Yao, how different he imagines it will be, that he makes now $15,000 for the Chinese national team. And when he goes to the NBA and Yao cuts me off and says, I'll get used to it.
In English, that's great.
It was great. It was the greatest. And I've already been with him 5 times. Yeah, so I don't know. I look at each one as really a magical moment to it.
Oh, there's no question. There's no question about that. That is a great story about Yao Ming.
Yeah, it was a riot.
Do you have, of all the things that you've covered, and I mean, you've been there for some of the most iconic moments, really, in the last 50 years, let's say, of sports. Is there one that stands out to you?
They're in different sports. You know, I was right there on the goal line when the greatest show on turf, when Vermeil won his Super Bowl, when the Rams, do you remember they beat the Titans?
I do.
I don't think it'll be as close against the Patriots, but that's when Mike Jones, the linebacker, stopped Dyson at the 1 yard line.
Probably the final play of the game in regulation. It is caught by Dyson. Can he get in? No, he cannot. Mike Jones made the tackle. And the Rams have won the Super Bowl.
I mean, I was right there in front of that. I was, you know, there for all the Red Sox glory and horrific moments. I had been in 86. I was assigned the Red Sox clubhouse celebration. And I remember they said, hold the elevator, Mitchell singled, right? Oh. Or Carter, however that went. But and then, as I mentioned, I've done 35 Final Fours. So I've been not only at Jordan shot, but Villanova, Georgetown, the Kansas, all the Duke wins. So those are really memorable. And in Wimbledon, it was really fun. My era of covering tennis was when all the Americans were great. It was Chris and Martina. Well, it was Borg, but McEnroe and Connors, Sampras and Agassi. So that was like really a fun run before the Berlin Wall fell and all the Russians took over the game.
I have to ask you this, because I know that you're close with Robert Kraft, the Patriots owner, and you've dealt with Bill Parcells, and it seems like you had a good relationship with him. What's your relationship like with Patriots coach Bill Belichick, and is he as inscrutable to you as he is to the rest of us?
I don't ask him very often, but last year I went up there and I did something he said no one had ever asked him before. We sat down and I invited Joe Bellino, who, you know, Joe was his hero.
From Navy, yes, from the Naval Academy when Belichick's dad was coaching there, Belichick's late father, Steve.
Of course. So I brought a whiteboard and a Sharpie and I said, now, when Bellino was winning the Heisman, you, Bill, were 6 years old. And I said, can you remember a play of Joe Bellino's from back then? He took the Sharpie and the whiteboard, and he wrote down 27F trap, and he did it all, and he wrote touchdown, as if Bellino had scored a TD, and he handed it back to me, and the whole thing took 10 seconds. And it was his brain from 1959.
That's amazing, and that does speak to Bill. I mean, I think he has a photographic memory. I really do.
Yeah, he's probably some kind of savant, you know, really. But he did that, and he was so happy, and Bellino was so thrilled that he made it a touchdown. but I just remember it took him 10 seconds, 27F trap.
Yeah, you can always get Bill going on the Naval Academy. He's, you know, he really is different off the podium. If you can engage him on something he's interested to, and you talk to his friends, he has a completely different personality away from football. And obviously, you were able to do, and that's one of your great gifts, Leslie. That's made your career. You're so good at getting people to feel comfortable and open up. Were you always able to do that in life, or is that something you learned as a journalist?
Well, I think I've become an honorable role model because A, I'm very curious, and B, I'm a good listener. But I remember one year in the NFL, I guess I was getting more and more confident. And, you know, at that time, I would go every week to do a feature and then do a game on Sunday. And if someone would start to give me some cliche answer, I would just say, not good enough, try again. I would say it right to them.
Wow, I might have to try and use that. Yeah, this has been a really fun conversation. I have one last question for you. And it's based on Maya Angelou.
I hope it isn't that all of a sudden both of us it results in sudden death.
No, I think, yeah, no, we'll be fine.
Which I know is you get credit for.
There's a great quote you have in this book that I love that I hadn't seen before, to be honest, from Maya Angelou. And it says, people will forget what you said. People will forget what you did. But people will never forget how you made them feel. How do you hope you made people feel during your career and continue to make them feel during your career?
Oh, gosh. Yeah, isn't it brilliant on her part? I mean, really. I hope people walk away either feeling better about themselves or just in a better mood, or that maybe either that they taught me something or maybe they learned something. So, yeah, I've always carried that thought with me.
All right. That is the great Leslie Visser. Leslie, thank you so much for joining us here on Season Ticket. It was a real pleasure. And I have to say, I definitely enjoyed reading the book. Everybody should go out and grab a copy of this book. Again, the name of the book, Sometimes You Have to Cross, when it says Don't Walk, a memoir of breaking barriers. Leslie, thanks for coming on Season Ticket.
Oh, Chris, it was a blast. Say hello to everyone. Thank you.
I definitely will. That's it for this edition of Season Ticket, a production of the Boston Globe and WBUR Boston's NPR news station. I'm Chris Gaspert. Thanks for listening. We'll see you tomorrow.